You're listening to I'm Not Steve Kerr on the Believe Podcast Network. Now here are your hosts, the Resch Brothers, Colin and Scott.
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers gotta hug.
They are. That's the revetting. So you can see that's a synthetic that we're using. We lay them almost like bricks, and we use a modified mortar mix behind it that helps, you know, protect it. Most revetted bunkers in Scotland Island have maybe a 7 to 10 year lifespan. These will last 30 years if they're, you know, if they're maintained properly.
Welcome everyone. After a brief hiatus over the holidays, we are back. Yes, it's episode 11. I'm not Steve Kerr on the Believe Podcast Network. What you just heard or saw, if you're checking this out on our YouTube page, is our guest today, Mark Logan, telling my 11-year-old son Liam about the revetted bunkers that he's installing at a course that is very soon going to be hailed as an instant design classic. That's what I think. That's my opinion after checking it out for 2 hours. Well, more on that in a minute, but first some intros. Scott is here. He's in Park City, Utah, which means that it is the season of zero golf, but a lot of skiing. Right, Scott?
Although you wouldn't know it at the moment. We haven't had much snow lately this year. Very strange start to the winter.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have put those golf clubs away so fast.
All right. Scott has tons of experience when it comes to witnessing and reporting on new golf course designs from many years of media relations work, mostly in Southeast Asia. Mark, he is also a golf course raider, so keep that in mind. You might want to get on his good side right now.
I'll work on that. Actually, you guys sound a little half Australian, so two halves make a whole. So I'm feeling like we've got two Aussies here. It's great.
Oh, and mate.
Yeah, you do, right? We talked about this. Part of the draw here is, yeah, Scott and I, our mother's Australian. Half of our relatives are sprinkled all over the continent, the country. Half Aussies and the full Aussie. So this is going to be a lot of fun for us. But, Mark, we're thrilled to welcome you to the program. Where do we find you today? You're in an office. Are you at Karika Park in Alameda?
I am. I'm in my office here, ducking away for basically half an hour to an hour off the construction side of the new North Course. So it's great just to have a few, 30, 40 minute downtime and be able to chat to you guys. It's a good relaxation from the normal pace of building a golf course.
Well, I want to delve right into the North Course, okay? This is everyone, at least locally in the Bay Area, and those from afar that know what you are doing there right now. I just thought it was so interesting. One, I want to thank you for welcoming me, my son Liam, he's one of these kids, right? You met him. He's so interested in golf course design as an 11-year-old. I really want to kind of harness that interest and that ambition, and you were kind enough to welcome us for 2 hours. We walked the front nine, before you had to take off and we had to take off, and my friend Wayne joined us as well. But man, what a great day that was for us, and you really broke down everything for us, and what you're creating there I think is going to be an instant masterpiece, especially in the Bay Area, and it's going to draw huge numbers right away. Tell everyone where you're at in the process now, when a finished product can be expected, because you're more than halfway there.
Yeah. So we're little, the front nine's completely grassed out. As of earlier this week, we finished some tees that we sodded out after they were laser leveled. We have four holes left to shape and basically detail in irrigation and drainage. So we're on the final stretch, as they say. You can smell the finish line, which is a really great thing after 7 years of construction. The finish line can't get close enough for me. It's been a long, hard haul, but I'm really excited and happy with the way the North Course has turned out. You know, when we started, anybody that knows Alameda, it's a flat island city. And, this property is a fantastic piece of property. The weather here is a bit like my state, my home state in Australia, basically, of Melbourne. The weather's nearly identical. There's a system called the Köppen Climatic Charting System. It was developed by Melbourne University for viniculture, and it was used for viniculturists all over the world to match up climate. Obviously, grapes and wine is the important thing. So I use it to sort of match up, see how Alameda fared against Melbourne, and nearly identical temperatures, except Melbourne gets one more inch of rain per year. So, you know, being able to use grasses that were used in some of the sandbelt golf courses in Melbourne that would be drought tolerant, less chemical, less fertilizer, much more fun for playing golf on, it was really the ideal place. The weather was fantastic. The site was probably less than fantastic. It was dead flat. This is a 330-acre property. It's a 45-hole golf course. We raised and contoured, obviously, the south course with my good friend, Rhys Jones. On the north course, this Australian architect, unheralded, as they say, thought he'd give it a go. And
up and coming.
up and coming, exactly. What I wanted to do was I thought, if you go down to the Alameda foreshore, which is just, if anybody hasn't been there, you've got to go down. It's absolutely spectacular. Walking along on South Shore, there is absolutely gorgeous. There's the soft dune system, you know, basically facing the bay. So that gave me an idea of, you know, if this site was like that back in the 1920s or, you know, early 1900s when this golf course was originally built, the North Course, what would it have looked like? And, you know, what could you do if the site was this spectacular site? Because, you know, most every architect dreams about walking onto a fantastic site. We've seen Sheep Ranch open up basically last year, which is a spectacular
right
site.
Right here.
Scott's got the hat.
You got it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't need to do a whole lot right there. The site had all the natural features, interest. It's pretty hard to beat the, obviously, the Pacific Ocean right there. Maybe the Indian Ocean might beat it, but that's an Aussie pump there on that one. But, you know, it's hard to beat. So the landforms are what, you know, golf course architects look for. Some of the great architects, you know, back in sort of the beginning of the golden age, they had these pristine properties. Old Tom Morris, when he started basically doing his design work in the sort of mid-1875s, you know, sites were basically pure. They were very raw and organic, as they say. So I thought if I filled the site and I created those sort of contours and believable dune system like we have down there on the foreshore, and then carve the golf holes out into it to create the interest, I thought we'd have something, you know, that would work out pretty well. Lo and behold, it's actually probably turned out a little better than I'd expected. Some of the natural contours and shaping, that aerial picture from the drone shot I took and sent to you the other night, it just looks absolutely incredible. We were able to capture a very natural feeling. There'll probably be golf raters and riders that will come to this property and think we inherited this fantastic piece of property when in fact we had virtually nothing other than the routing and some ponds that we didn't basically alter. That's really what we started with. So everything that is now contoured out there has been man-made, and it's a lot of work. To you actually have to, you know, the minimalistic design movement, which is very popular today, you know, architects like Tom Doak and Cool Crenshaw and Gil Hance and you know, many of the, you know, great modern architects that are doing minimalistic work. What I had to do was I had to touch everything to feel like I touched nothing. So in actual fact, for the average person, they don't realize, you know, when you walk on a place like Sheep Ranch where you go, oh, this thing's just absolutely gorgeous. When people come and play the North Course, and they hopefully will feel, you know, obviously a different site and setting, but feel the actual rawness of the site. We had to man-made and, you know, manufacture every portion of that. So I think, you know, there's a real process that, you know, we looked at it in three different ways. As I said, we started off with, you know, building the site. What would it look like back in its raw state? Then putting the golf holes into it. Then, you know, unlike the, you know, sort of the golden age, we've been a little bit more conservative on greens. We wanted to have the greens fast and firm like we have on the South Course, which is synonymous with sandbelt golf in Australia. So we wanted, if you played 36 holes, we want you to be able to go out on the South Course, the North Course, have a great fun time, not have to change your putting stroke. Important for guys like Scott that are really good players. That's a lot of fun. You know, the contouring of some of, you know, the old classic golf courses was very in for modern golf and the modern technology and green speeds and, you know, obviously the technology in the game with balls and clubs is dramatically different. So I think, you know, the golf course, its defense is the green. So I wanted to have these fantastic green complexes that would complement the South Golf Course. And I think we're on track. Ron Whitten, former basically Golf Digest senior architect editor, was out and he's working with me a little bit, making sure I don't go completely off the rails. I see, you know, stay in the golf corridors if you want, because sometimes you can overthink it. And I didn't want, I wanted to make sure that I didn't get repetitious. I did create an interesting golf course. It's only going to be between 6,350 and 6,400 yards, which in modern terms isn't long. But I think, you know, with the firmness of the golf course, the contouring, the interest that we've got, it'll be a great golf course. And if you want to play commuters in, they can play, want to play as a par 70, there's that capability. It'll just be a golf course that whether you're a great player, you've got to pick the right lines to be able to score well, even though that's the fairways will be some 70 acres of actual fairway or, you know, fairway cut surface, which is a pretty big area. Most golf courses, you know, average around between 25 to sort of 40. So having 70 acres is a lot of fairway cut grass. But there's these landing areas within the contouring that you want to be at. So for the better player, they want to aim, land in those areas. That gives you a good line to the green, to the pin. For the average player or for the higher handicapper and seniors, you've got all this fairway that, you know, it's pretty hard to hit a not hit a 120-yard, 130-yard wide fairway. So there's a lot of fun to keep advancing the ball. And maybe, you know, you're playing, Colin, you're playing with Scott and you're not hitting the ball as well, and he's hitting the ball really well, and you get a little bit of the rub of the course. You know, there's that opportunity on a golf course like this too, which I think is a lot of fun. It brings what I call the triple F into the design component. It's sort of firm, it's fast, and it's fun for everybody. And that changes the game. It doesn't matter how far you hit the ball. It matters sometimes, you know, even if you hit a bad shot, you may be able to get a bit of the rub of the course, roll on. You might get, you know, basically some favorable bounce that may actually help you. So, you know, sometimes that's a good thing. A lot of golf today with the longer roughs and the, you know, sort of softer conditions, you don't have that ability. And I think that that's what we want to create here at Cricker Park, is just fun for everybody. And when it comes to standing up to sort of the better players, I think the firmness will be great defense, and the greens with the contouring and the firmness of the greens will certainly defend it, you know, the golf course admirably. And if you play well, hey, you should score well.
You know, and that's the thing too about, you know, courses like that you're describing, that makes it for any player fun. You want to continue to go back to a course, right? You don't want to be bored of it. Play it once, I'm done, never going back there. So having these kind of elements where you've got, the more you play it, the more you understand the backstops that exist, the angles to come in from, you know, how a ball might roll out and end up in a collection area. Well, you know, next time, you know, you step out there, that's there, and that's a possibility. So, you know, and that kind of makes the game fun each time you go back and play a course like that.
Definitely. You know, one of the things, you know, being Aussie and, you know, golf and all sports is sort of in our foundation of as a country. And, you know, we're fanatic sports players. And since you guys are half Aussie, I'm sure, you know, you're half fanatics, you know, basically. So that's a good thing, right? But we align it to like a good pub. You know, you go to a pub and you really enjoy yourself there. You got your favorite spot and everything like that. It's just enjoyable to come back to and just spend time there. A golf course should be like that. It shouldn't be like, oh my God, I just played 18 holes, I got completely destroyed. Even if you don't have a good day, you should still, you know, have some fun and enjoy the day. And I think, you know, golf today, you know, 7,500 yard golf courses, 7,800 yard golf courses longer, that might be great for the elite golfer, but for the average person, it's just way too much and it's not any fun anymore. And, you know, we've proven in this sort of mad world of COVID that, you know, being outside, being in the sun, being able to walk and enjoy yourself out in a golf that has natural social distancing, a sport that has natural social distancing, it's really, you know, the ideal place to be. And golf hopefully will continue to get this positive boost from, you know, the advantages of playing golf, the health benefits. The doctors all say, hey, walking is one of the, you know, you want to prolong your life 10 years, you should walk and do some moderate exercise. No better way than to play golf.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Mark, because I walked the front nine with you, and I think I said it that day, I am already thinking about playing my second round there, because as you just alluded to, and Scott kind of touched on it as well, because of how you've shaped this course, the course knowledge is going to come into play. And the more you play that, the more fun it's going to become. So I'm already looking past my first round, which is going to be fun, but I think it's going to grow in the fun factor the more you play it. And that is what is so exciting to me. There's only 25 bunkers on the course. The revetted bunkers, as we mentioned at the beginning video when you were walking with Liam. And I'm going to incorporate all this video into our webcast that's on our YouTube page. So if you're just listening to the podcast, be sure to check it out, because I took tons of video and you're going to be able to get a good idea of what this course is about and how it could potentially play. It's pretty exciting to look at up close and personal, as I had the opportunity to do. But Scott, I know you've got so many questions for Mark here, so fire away.
I do. You know, I think just the first one, though, I'm kind of curious, you know, how you ended up in the States, Mark. And, you know, I think you said earlier that you've been on this project for 7 years. So obviously 45 holes of golf to design, you know, that makes sense. But how does that, being in that position, you know, affect what you're able to touch when it comes to other projects? Do you just sort of put any other opportunities on hold for a while, or how does that work?
Well, like most Aussies, we're probably a little insane. We tend to, you know, basically try to do as much as we possibly can, obviously within reason. You don't want to, you know, go outside your bandwidth or your scope of ability. But, you know, I've been over here for, you know, it's my 22nd year in the States, and so I'm not sure if I could call myself one of you guys totally yet, but maybe I'm half now.
So, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You guys are half Aussie, I might be half American. So,
that's right.
You know, I'm working that way. I'm never going to give my accent up, though, because I think it works for me. You know, if I'm talking, it's a bit like the Scottish at the bar in the afternoon. You go to St. Andrews, you go to the Dunvegan, and you have a couple of toddies and a scotch, and you go, I don't know what he said, but it sounded really good. So, you know, that's why I'm going to keep my accent for a little bit longer. But, you know, in seriousness, it is difficult trying to get to other projects. I've clocked up a lot of miles in the last 20 years, flying all over the world, flying all over the country, working with golf courses. But, you know, it's a sport that I love, and it's a business that I've enjoyed from the very first time I started in it. And so I enjoy it. The moment I stop enjoying it is probably the time I won't want to do that. But, you know, I've worked 60 hours a week for 7 years just on this project. And so it doesn't faze me one little bit. It's a labor of love, if you want. And, you know, when you enjoy something, the time goes so quickly, the day mm-hmm. goes so quickly before the end of it. I'm fortunate I've got my son and a brother, and I've got some really fantastic people that I work with. So it goes pretty quick. We've got an unbelievable shaper, Dave Dow, who I've known since I did a project called Maya Karma back in 99-2000. And Dave worked there, and he's been a friend and an associate. And he's just a phenomenal guy. He's difficult, like most shapers, but he's just such an artist and a talented guy. And it's a pleasure to work with guys like that. And having my brother and my son as well, they can keep you sort of grounded and you know, beat you into, you know, thinking a little differently. So for me, it's an enjoyment, and being able to spend the time out there and you know, do the things. And obviously working with Reese, I'd worked with Reese on a number of other projects before I did the South Course, and working with Reese, and Reese is a good friend. It's always enjoyable working with people that you like to spend time with.
Do you want to be mentioned in the same breath as the names that you've rattled off, the Reese Jones, the Tom Doakes? Do you want to be mentioned with those guys?
You know, the success of what I do will be basically measured of how long the golf course is here. You know, there's some great architects that I've mentioned, and all of them have had golf courses disappear from the landscape. I think that, you know, the key to any golf course is success long term. And obviously that makes, you know, it has to make some financial sense. It's got to be enjoyable. It's got to be something you want to play over and over again. And you want people to come back. To Scott's point, if you don't come back, you know, even though there's a lot of golfers, you know, in the United States, you still want to have your core group of golfers that can want to come out and your sort of your basis for your business, like any business, like a pub or a restaurant. You'll always have your, you know, your locals or your clientele that like to frequent that spot. So certainly that to me will be the success of the golf course. You know, if people really enjoy from a design or artistic standpoint of the North Course, that's just a bonus. Like I said, I just want people to come out here to Creeker Park, play 36 holes and go, God damn, I can't wait to come back again. And that's really, that'll be the success. That'll be my success story.
I think you should add some Australian flags to the North Course, Mark. I think the pubs, you should have the option to order a midi. I think you should have Resch's beer on tap. I don't know if you've ever had Resch's. It's an Australian beer. What's some other ones? You know, Australianize this place for us.
Yeah, meat pies.
I would love a meat pie and a pasty, but I'm not sure if you guys, you know, your hot dogs and things like that, but you warp up them too much. So I wouldn't want all those pies sitting there for that long. Right. And then when it comes to beer, we got so many beers over there that, you know, I don't know if I could rattle them off. I mean, everybody thinks Foster's is the, you know, is obviously the Aussie beer, but it's not my preferred beer. But, you know, there's certainly a case. And then since we've got the South Course, you could say that Australia is in the Southern Hemisphere, so we could probably push it a little bit that way. So, you know, I'll take that under advisement and consider that for when we get both courses open.
Hey, at the very least, you got a sandbelt style course or courses there. Get some VB in there, Victoria Bitter.
Now you're talking, and actually, I got just a quick little funny story. I was doing a project with Reese Jones in Florida, and he's a master shaper. Had to have a Coors Light every afternoon, and I said to him, I said, "Oh, you want a VB?" And I gave him two, and I had to drive him home. So he wasn't quite used to the strength of the VB. So maybe I might take it. It'd have to be a slow introduction to it. We'd have to limit how many we give out or sell out.
Yeah. Well, you're talking a minute ago about longevity, Mark, and it's kind of goes to one of the questions I'd written down here that I wanted to pose, and that's, you know, I know, having, you know, worked in the business myself a little bit, that no course owner likes to close their course down for a redesign, you know, but every owner likes big ROIs, right? So I've got to think that Greenway clients tend to see a full return on their investment pretty quickly. Is that accurate, given how much you save them on water and maintenance costs and all those things?
It is. It's helpful. You know, golf is a tough business. You know, it's really requires a lot of thought, a lot of planning, a lot of effort and implementation. And, you know, certainly Greenway's got that experience. You know, a bit like old Tom Morris, my beginnings were sort of very humble in the, you know, in the obviously maintenance side of it, if you want the greenkeeping side of it. And so I understand that very well. And that's obviously the single largest expense on most golf courses. So we certainly have an advantage understanding that over many other organizations, just because that's sort of the foundation, that's a strength. And certainly it's an important component. Any golf course that can't pay the bills doesn't last too long. And if you look at how many golf courses we've lost, you know, nationally across the country, you know, nearly pushing 2,000 in the last sort of 5 years, it's almost tragic. There's been some fantastic golf courses disappear from the landscape. And that's always been around. There's been golf courses, fantastic golf courses, Lido Golf Course back in the day, that disappeared. Some Mackenzie golf courses disappeared. The one that was in Queens, Bayside, all those have disappeared, unfortunately. So it's certainly very important component that, you know, golf makes financial sense, and it's got to make sense to the consumer as well. It's got to be enjoyable. It's got to be at the right price point. All those things are a key element. And when we sort of sat down at this property, that was certainly a fundamental discussion that we had when we started about the improvements on this property. Of what do we want to do? How do we want to do it? What are the objectives? What are the savings we want to get? And we want to keep, you know, the price point reasonable so that, you know, players of all caliber have got accessibility to this property.
Have any opportunities or potential opportunities popped up in the wake of COVID and the popularity of golf? You know, it's sort of surged over this last year in popularity.
There's always opportunities popping up. Once you start doing due diligence on them, do they make sense? That's sort of the key element. Gotcha. That we sort of go through the review process. And certainly, you know, there's still golf courses, even in this fantastic, you know, upbeat in COVID in terms of, you know, golf participation, there's still golf courses struggling on the vine, utility costs, you know, labor costs going up, raw materials going up. So it is something that really needs to be thought through. You know, when Colin talked about 25 bunkers, we want to go back to a simplistic time in sort of the golden age where labor was and budgets weren't very large. We want to keep it raw and natural. And again, part of that was in the overall thinking of what do we need to do to this 45 hole property to have a sustainable business.
Are those eucalyptus trees on the property?
They are, you know, unfortunately, some smart Aussie sold them to you guys, and he made a bit of money off them because they used them for wood for the railways. Figured out pretty quickly they weren't the right ones. So I don't know which Aussie it was, but he was probably a pretty sharp guy.
I just really quickly want to talk about the end date again. What you project for the North Course when you hope to have it open to the public?
Yeah. So our initial plans were sort of set back a bit. COVID, obviously in construction, has sort of set back some materials. Manufacturing slowed down. Because I'm bringing in soil to basically raise and sand to contour the golf course, that slowed off a little bit too. So all those things have made it a bit more challenging. But we're on target to sort of get 9 holes open in the summer of this year, the front 9, and then the back 9 next year in 2022. Obviously, we've put in a grass hybrid Bermuda on the fairways, tees, and green surrounds on the North Course, and it's a warm season grass, so we only get growth in the summertime. So we don't get any growth or much growth during the cooler months. So that, you know, adds to the time frame as well. And you know, back in the sort of golden age of golf course, it wasn't unrealistic for a golf course to take 3 to 5 years to sort of build and open. So, you know, if we're using that as a model, golden age design and sort of that philosophy, it's not unusual to have a golf course take longer to build. And so it also gives you an opportunity. Reese always made this point to me, is that it gave you an opportunity to tweak and fine tune and adjust things. Sometimes, you know, you see it on paper, it worked, but when we put it in the field, it didn't quite work. And it gives you a chance to tweak that and make some changes to it to fit right and to work right, so that it sort of has a really unique feel and it complements the whole, whatever it is, a contour, a green. You know, I've seen plenty of golf courses, and I'm sure there's architects out there and golf course builders that have had golf courses where, you know, have a design plan that doesn't quite fit, and they force it in to fit, and it never quite fits. I'm sure, Scott, you've seen golf courses like that. This gives you an opportunity to rework that a little bit because you've got some time to consider that, you know, and sometimes you just don't have that. Your schedules are so intense and you've got to get the golf course, you know, constructed and open, and obviously revenue is important, or you know, if it's part of a housing development, that's a key component to the housing development. So you don't always have that opportunity, and having the time to be able to do that, I can certainly say we've done tweaks and changes that we've sort of looked back, stepped back and said, oh, that's not quite right. That works a little bit better. And as the golf holes unfolded, we've added a little bit more into it. I think it just creates a few more interesting features and natural points that, you know, the player, especially the accomplished player, will really appreciate.
We have about 6-7 minutes left here, but Mark, Scott and I are both interested in how you got into this. And go back to your youthful days in Australia and your ties to Royal Melbourne, because I think it's worth noting in a story that people should hear. How does someone like my son, that's why he wanted to come meet with you, right, was how do you get into this? And meeting with you, obviously, I think was an integral first step for him. But for you, what was it?
My mother had 6 kids, and so, you know, we'd drive her crazy. So she basically banished us all out to work. And fortunately, we lived in Sandringham, which is just basically a stone throw away from some of the greatest golf courses all around that, Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, all those golf courses are right there. So Sandringham Public Golf Course, all of that is just in that fantastic sand belt. So my brother, next brother down from me, got banished to a bakery. My older brother got banished into a shop. I got fortunately got put into the golf course work. So and I enjoyed it so much that I, when I finished my education, I got a couple of degrees in horticulture and in botany that I felt were important as a basis. And I got to work with a genius golf course builder. His name was Jeff Osman. He was just unbelievable. He was one of those guys that when I worked with him, I had an epiphany of how golf courses should be built and all the components that went to it. And back in those days, there wasn't a golf course construction company. We had to do everything ourselves. So learning from him was probably one of the single greatest experiences. And obviously, you know, growing up in Sandbelt, Australia, those two key factors probably shaped my destiny.
So there you go, Colin. Banish Liam to the golf course.
I can do that. You know, I can do that.
Or you've got to have another five kids, mate, so that you
yeah. really are, I cannot motivated. Do that. I cannot do that.
A question that just popped to mind, Mark, out of curiosity, when you're lurking around, say, the patio area of the South Course, right? Assuming you do that from time to time, do you listen to these conversations, what players are saying about the experience they just have, with the idea that maybe, you know what, I might be able to learn something from these everyday weekend warrior players that maybe I could apply on the North Course or another project? Do you ever find yourself doing that?
I do. You know, everybody can have a relevant point, and you can learn something from everybody. Even a 25 handicapper, there can be some relevance right. into, you know, his game, and that obviously reflects a fair portion of the population. So there is always relevance. So, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years coming up here, basically in wow. February. So it's been a long time, and I've heard a lot of things. Some, you know, it goes straight in and straight out, but some of it stays locked in the vault. And certainly in the right situation, at the right property and the right circumstances, that may, I may unravel some of that and use that basically and incorporate some of those thoughts that I'd heard. Because like I said, they're all really important. And yes, I've read, you know, hundreds of pages, maybe thousands of pages of golf books and data. And there's so many different perspectives. I don't think there's a right or wrong, but certainly there's things that, the better player who would certainly be more listened to in terms of, you know, their accomplishments and what they feel the golf course should be. So, but I think everybody can, you know, there's takeaways that everybody can provide. So to answer your question, yes, I do listen to everybody.
Do you believe in having a signature hole? I know that you mentioned to me that you kind of have a signature green for the North Course, but is there one at the North Course that's a signature hole besides the signature green? And can you tell people about the green?
Well, I would say it's probably going to be the postage stamp. Probably gone a little off the reservation since the public golf. I've used a U.S. mail stamp more so than a postage stamp. It's a little bit bigger than postage stamp, but it's in the same mathematical equation of the postage stamp to the other greens at that property. So I think that people will really like that. And the view from that green, you will now see the city of San Francisco with some of the tree, the eucalyptus that we've removed. So it's a pretty daunting sight. And I think it'll be a fun hole. It's only 126 yards, but I think it's going to be one of those holes where you either really love it or you will curse it. And I think Rhys Jones said to me, he said, don't blame me if you go into the bunker, because the bunkers there will be pretty perilous on a short hole like that. I think it'll be certainly, if you know, signature, it'll be certainly one of the most talked about holes on that golf course. I think there's a number of really good fun holes out there. You know, we've got template holes that I think are a different rendition. They're not replicas, but they're renditions that I think people will really enjoy them.
Scott, one last question for Mark. We've got about a minute and a half here.
I was just going to ask if, you know, what sort of challenges you might have faced or continue to face there at Karrika versus maybe other properties you've worked on, such as Monterey Peninsula and King's Barnes over in Scotland.
You know, all the golf courses that I've worked on, this has had its challenges, but I think every golf course project has its challenges. The biggest upside of this property is when it's 100 degrees out in the valley or over in Walnut Creek where I live, and it's 80 degrees here, I'll take that every day of the week. I actually, my whole team and crew will probably be disappointed when we have to move to another site where it is 100 degrees and we've got to work in that 100 degrees. We've had some pretty spectacular weather here over the last 7 years of the build on this property, and I will take that any day of the week. So that's sort of been the upside of the build here, that the weather's just made it absolutely gorgeous to work in. And that's, you don't always get that. Scotland can be cold. When I did some work there, it was in December, so it was dark early at, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was miserably cold. Monterey with the fog set in June and July, you know, 50, 60 degrees. I love 80 degrees in Alameda. That's the sweet spot.
I witnessed or observed the construction of golf courses a lot in Southeast Asia, and the issue there was the heat. The humidity, it's just crippling. I remember thinking at times, oh my gosh, I could not imagine being out here building this right now.
Yeah, I did have done a couple of projects in humid tropical, subtropical environments, and when it's hot and humid, it is absolutely brutal. It's, you've got to force yourself to keep drinking water, otherwise you're going to drop like Louis the Fly, as we'd say in Australia.
Start seeing stars.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yep. Yep.
Well, Mark, hey, this has been so much fun. We got to wrap this thing up. I told you we'd make this kind of short and sweet. You got to get back into the course and continue the wonderful work you're doing there on the North Course. So we appreciate you taking the time. Like I've told everyone, this is going to be an absolute gem when it's completely finished. I can't wait to get on it when you open the first nine holes here this summer. And congratulations to you and your team on what is going to be a masterpiece, I think, for the long term. So appreciate you, man. Thanks.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. And when you come out, we'll have I'll make sure I got a couple of VBs in stock, and I'll bring
there
them over
we
so
go.
We can knock them down. How's that?
Now we're talking.
Okay. Perfect.
Sounds
guys.
Great.
Thanks. Appreciate
Sounds
it, guys.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Cheers, mate. Next week, we're talking playoffs, broadcasting, and acting with former NFL Pro Bowl offensive lineman Lincoln Kennedy. May even talk a little Husky football too. But before we sign off episode 11, if you've been frequenting this podcast, you've heard me talk about being one of the millions of Americans navigating unemployment these days, which means I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. And I have to say, I've been fortunate to connect with some amazingly talented people. This past week, I was contacted by UK singer-songwriter Dan Hughes. He shared his latest track with me, and I was just blown away. In Dark Times, it's the sort of tune that just makes you feel good. He said I could share it, all rights reserved, of course. Find him on Facebook at Dan Hughes Music 100, on YouTube, Dan Hughes, or his website, danhughesmusic.com. People helping people. That's what we're about here on the I'm Not Steve Kerr podcast. We'll be back with episode 12 next week, Lincoln Kennedy. Until then, the song is titled Feels Like Thunder. Enjoy.